Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s back before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we've been off for 2 weeks.
Yes, we have. Yes, we have.
what a couple of weeks. I was just talking before we hit record about moving and all that stress. And I actually wanted to bring up, because I don't know how you, like, your DVDs, Blu-rays, etc. Like, do you have them all displayed? Or at this point, are you just like, I have so many, they're just in boxes and places?
No, that's the next trip. So I have shelves in my library. Like, I have an office, right, for work and stuff, and that's where, like, it's my man cave, right? I have all of my Blu-rays, but if you saw it, it's like you know, like how, like, they're like the English professor that has stacks of books and like rows upon rows inside of shelves. That's literally me, but with Blu-rays. So I have a plan of like getting stuff out, like, you know, putting it into like airtight waterproof boxes from like the crate store or whatever the hell it's called. It's all to say, like, it's a mess. It's not a mess, but it's an organized mess. Like right now on my desk, if you saw it, I literally have 20 Blu-rays and 4Ks. Like, I have the new Nice Guys 4K, like that big box set. I don't know if you've seen it on social media. I've got like the Seinfeld box set. Like, I have like I have a stack of things that I'm watching for review. It's like, it's just a random hodgepodge of crap that's on my desk, and that's just my desk. So I can only imagine, like, the shelving situation is always like a, like, for media collector or like just collectors like us. It's a big thing. It's a big deal.
Well, because with books and Blu-rays, you want, like, the comics, you don't necessarily want everything displayed, right? Like, if you're like, I collect comics as well. So, like, those, you know, things can damage. It's just light can over time damage those.
It's just like, So you want to keep those in the boxes, but, like, you know, you also want to display some of the bigger ones, especially if you've got them like cased up and like you have them already authenticated. Like, you know, it's not a bad thing.
But you want all your DVDs.
Yeah.
Out. Like, you want it like a easy access, and so. We moved into a two bedroom, and the second bedroom, which this is not a Logan idea. This was, I'd say a Stephanie idea, but at least a joint idea, that the second room would just be a game room. Unfortunately our couch is so comfortable. I don't know how well that's going to work out, because we will probably just want to sit on the couch. But, you know, classic games, etc. Like, we're gonna have a room separate, and it has a closet. And at first, we were gonna have separate closets, and then the main bedroom closet is so big. She was like, "Just put your stuff in here, because it's a lot of space." And I said, "Well, what are we gonna do with the other closet?" She was like, "I don't know." And I you know, stole the idea of, like, what if I build my own Criterion closet?
That's great.
So I got some shelves I thought would work. They might wind up not working, unfortunately, but and I'm still low on space. But yeah, so I thought you would kind of appreciate that. It's not as discerning and you know, hard to get into as the Criterion closet, because there are things like, I just recently got You can apparently no longer get the old that first live action Captain America movie.
No, it's they stopped selling it. It's out of print. So,
well, some company has a what they call they're calling it a director's version with scenes added back in. And I meant to send you the link and I forgot about it. It's a not cheap Blu-ray. It was like $35, but yeah, I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, unfortunately. But yeah, that's the kind of stuff that's in my quote Criterion closet. not necessarily works of art.
You know what? They're works of art to you, and that's all that matters. You know, I love it. I love the fact that you guys have got a game room now, like a media room. Like, that's awesome. Like, you know, like, that's...
AKA the podcast room, because it's where I'm going to do my podcast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Get a little... do you have a couch in there? Like, do you have a couch to, like, go around everything?
No, I don't know what the furniture situation is going to be like in here yet, because right now it's just everything still boxed up except for the desk and my computer to podcast, because that was about all we could manage to get done in here. Mm-hmm. Mostly at my insistence, because like we're not going to live in this room, and therefore... Mm-hmm. As long as I can do this, anything else can kind of just wait.
Yeah, know? And you can also, like, you can slowly build it up to the way that you want it. Because, I mean, right. Like, I don't know if you're kind of like me, where it's like you have a vision for it, but you also want to test that vision out just in case it doesn't work. Yeah.
I'm a learn by doing. Like, mm-hmm. I don't have that, I can see it. Like, I have vague ideas of what I want it to look like. And I have to, like, put everything somewhere and then be like, nope, that's not where it goes. Got to change it. So it's probably pretty annoying. But, you know, and the end result is always like, yeah, I'm really happy with this. So, you know, it'll be it'll be.
So. Absolutely. Which, I mean, like I said, like, it eventually will be what you want it to be, or even better yet, it'll be better than what you wanted it to be. That's what, like, my thing is. Like, I'm happy with my space. I really love it, even though it's overfilled. It has a problem. It has a space problem now. But I love it for what it is. I mean, you know, I can only hang, like, 3 pieces of art up. So, like, I have my, like, so, like, my 3 pieces of art are all Star Wars based. So my first Star Wars poster was actually an original Japanese Empire Strikes Back 1 sheet that my grandparents got me when they went to Japan. So I have that framed. My wife was actually framed it for me for my 40th. So she got that framed. Yeah, it's awesome. Like, it's my favorite thing, because it is an actual original Japanese one sheet. I almost sold it back when I was having money problems, like way back in the day. Somebody offered me a lot of money for it. A lot of money, because it's an original Japanese one sheet from the original release. But I never sold it. So, like, there's that. And then I have a Rick Sells Darth Vader. I don't know if you know who Rick Sells is. I mean, you probably do. He's the guy that does the sideways portraits.
Yeah.
So he did a Vader that's Vader behind a red background. I have that. And then Rick Sells also does like these like old school, like they're kind of like, have you ever seen those boxing photos where they use multiple colors and they use the dabbing technique? Like Rocky 3 has it at the end when he's punching him, right? It's also in Creed where you see the art. Well, he does that same kind of technique, but he does it like for Star Wars characters. And I have Grogu and the Mandalorian done like that.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, like, those are, like, my four pieces of art that I can only have up because the room is so small because the shelving. I have like, 8-foot-tall shelving in my room because that's how many Blu-rays I have, right? So, like my it's 10 feet tall, so, like, I have 2 feet of space above me. So I have all these, like, extra, like, I have all of, and then I have a custom, my dad made in the 70s, he made an oak shelf that's, like, 11 foot by 10 foot. It's huge. And so, like, my Criterions and my Screen Factory, Shout Factories go on that, which it's still not filled up. That's how weird and picky I, like, Screen Factory, like, it takes up most of it because, you know, like, I get that stuff. So, but yeah, so it's like, it's all shelves. There's no space for art, unfortunately. Like, I have my two Hot Toys figures, the Dude and the Mandalorian. But other than that, like, everything else is just wall-to-wall Blu-rays. I mean, I wanted it to be like a library, right? Like, I have a nook for my alcohol that I don't drink anymore. Like, I have scotch, right? Like, I have, like, a, I should send it to you. I have a Lagavulin
that's awesome.
I have a Lagavulin bottle, but it's actually specifically made by, what's his name? Goddamn.
Ron Swanson.
Yes. Ron Swanson. No, absolutely. Offerman. The Offerman brand, like the Offerman, like it's an 11-year-old bottle, but now it's like a 15-year-old bottle. I have that scotch, and so it's like I have a collection of scotches. Like, it's a nook. But yeah, like I like my room. It's my room. Like, I spend so much time in it that, like, you know, you have to kind of like your room, right? Yeah. If you don't, I mean, there's a problem. So yeah. No, absolutely. I can't wait to see pictures. Like, I really don't. I really can't. Like, I can't wait to see it all set up. Like, even if it takes a month or so, you know.
Yeah, that's you know, that the original hope was to really just kind of dive in and spend the week, getting everything done. Because I actually started. She's been here since the 13th. So I've been slowly moving stuff in for 2 weeks and. Mm. But with all the other little things that we don't have to dive any further into, like every time we started a project, things would just go sideways. So, but I, you know, I moved, everything's where I can get to it and we'll get it sorted out, you know, in fashion. So, so unfortunately, that means we haven't recorded in 2 weeks, but it means I haven't watched much in 2 weeks. So, I think I've watched at least two things that I know you haven't had a chance. One you may have never even heard of. Put it in the little. I know you can't see the footnotes. Can you see the chat?
No, I can't see the chat.
Oh well. It's fine. So, there's a show on Sci-Fi called Revival.
I've heard of it.
It's a new kind of sort of zombie show. It's a different twist. It's based on a comic, but it stars the, I can't think of her freaking name now, but she played Wynonna Earp in that show.
It's a very Canadian, like, produced show. Like, I saw the previews for it, and I was like, oh, shit. This looks very much like it could be something. Like, the writing, because, like, all these Canadian shows have great writing, right? It's just that their budgets, the budgetary, like, always have, like, the same, like, seven people starring in it, right? And the budgetary stuff,
yeah, the special effects are not great.
Yeah, it's not like a show that, like, okay, so, like, recently Resident Alien just came back, and it's not like that where it's shot in Canada, but, I mean, it has, like, Amblin money in it, so it looks really good. And it has, like, you know, but at the same time, like, no. I did see a trailer for this. Intriguing, but, like you said, like, I understood, like, as soon as you told me that it was based on a comic book series, like, I figured that you had at least read one of the runs.
Yeah.
And was like,
I don't think it's the quality of the comic for sure. Like it has it's weird to say lighter tone because it's about so in this town something happens and a bunch of people who have died just remarkably come back to life.
Yeah, like that's like I saw that through the premise of, and it's funny because it's a Canadian show, but it takes place in Wisconsin. I'm a Wisconsin boy. My dad grew up in Wisconsin, so shout out there. I looked at it, I was like, this is so Canadian, but it's not like it's not even close to Wisconsin, even though it's like, you know, supposedly taking place. But
nobody sounds like they're from Wisconsin.
but no, they all have that mid-Atlantic trying not to be Canadian accent.
Yes.
But doesn't she play like a deputy or like a her cop?
Her dad's the sheriff and she's the deputy, and
It's the dude from Jag, right?
Is that, like her dad's that's who he is. I was like, I know this guy, but I don't know what I know him from. Yes, David James Elliott. It's Jag. Yeah.
Like, which I love. Okay, so, like, can we just take a side tangent about how, like, JAG was the original NCIS, and NCIS was a spinoff of it. It was JAG NCIS, and then that became so big that they JAG went away, but NCIS never did.
Yep.
I always find that hilarious that David James Elliott was, like, helping out Mark Harmon get his shit together in the early aughts before, like, you know, Mark Harmon became, like, you know, the David Caruso of the NCIS world. But I love Jag. I mean, anything that was like any kind of mystery, I think it's been settled, like any kind of mystery show that has like mysteries or law or any kind of like that kind of shit, like Matlock. I mean, I'm excited to get to Kathy Bates. Kathy Bates, not Baker, but Bates. Wrong show, wrong actress. Hers, and then also, just another side note, sideception. Did you know that High Potential was written by Drew Goddard?
I did.
I didn't know that. It instantly has put it on the top of my list of stuff that I'm going to watch once I can get through the stuff that I have to watch. But anywho, back to Revival. David James Elliott as the sheriff. They're dealing with these things, these revivers, right?
There's a murder, and she's trying to solve the murder, and I've only watched the pilot.
Okay.
And so it's doing the same thing that Resident Alien's doing. Mm-hmm. It's airing on Peacock, but it's airing a week behind.
Okay.
So, like, I won't be able to stay current on it if I'm streaming it because I don't have Sci-Fi. So,
yeah.
And I haven't caught up to this season of Resident Alien yet. Stephanie is watching. She's currently catching up. So, we're gonna watch it together.
Is she an Alan Tudyk fan, by the way?
Yeah. Yeah, for the most part. Like, I don't know if she's as, like, oh shit, Alan Tudyk's in this. We're watching it as we are. But yeah, she's seen Firefly. She likes Firefly. So, but yeah, she's digging the show. Revival, it's out there. The first episode, maybe the second episode by now, is streaming on Peacock. It might be okay, it might turn out to be really good, but it might also turn out to be like a bust of a Canadian show. So who knows? We'll see. Speaking of shows that have also returned, you messaged me that you haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but I did watch the first two episodes of The Bear. I know all the episodes dropped at once, which I think is a terrible idea for that show, but I'm two episodes into this probably last season, maybe. Have they said for sure?
Yeah, they said for sure. It's because they just can't get back the cast. Like, if they can't get the cast back together, and the cast is
they've all blown up.
Yeah, and well, the cast was like, it's not having anything to do with the quality because they know that what's his name, Wider could do it. It's the fact that it's so emotionally taxing because of because they film in order. And it's like, you know, and it's emotionally like a jarring film. So like they film it in chronological order. And some of these things are just like they always have at least two or three episodes that are just, you know, like emotionally just raw and draining. And they don't have any time off because it's a tight schedule to like make sure that they're like, it's an expensive show too, from what I understand. Like it's like $40 million an episode, or $30 million an episode because of all the cast. It's like,
yeah,
because they could, like, you know, all of the
and you cast have people for money. Like, you know, 30 seconds.
Yeah,
you know,
a lot of the cameos, I guess, they're done for basically little to no money unless they actually show up for a full episode. Like Will Poulter, for example, like talked about it. He was like, I was in one episode, like, you know, in passing, like I was in passing glimpses in the first like episode that you saw me in like at the end of season one. And I got paid nothing, but then they came back in season two and they paid me because I was in episodes. So it's like, it's weird how that works, and it's a great show. I mean, I love it. Like we're super excited to actually dive into it. But I want to dive into it. Like, I think that, like, you're probably the same way. You want to dive into it at your pace.
Yeah, which is I'm not gonna sit. It's too. You said emotionally taxing, and I agree. It's too much. To like, I watched two episodes, and I was like, well, that's good for me. Even though the first two episodes aren't extremely intense, but even the way they edit the show is so intense that it's just. I'm good for after these two episodes. Have you read any of the reviews for this season?
I read the New York Times review because they kept it spoiler free. I read the Food Critic's version of it, like his review, which he kept spoiler free and what he was talking about. I'm like, because he said that this was the best season. Like, he felt like everything at the end came together perfectly.
I need to read that review because all the other reviews I've read have been like, yeah, if this is truly it, this is not, maybe not going out on the high it should go out on.
Huh. Interesting. Okay.
And one of the reviews, the headline was like, The Bear serves up the same old, not slop, but something to that effect. And I thought that was an interesting, I didn't read the full review. I was like, well, that's interesting. And then I started watching the show, and the first moments of the first episode, he wakes up to Groundhog Day, and this thing keeps recurring. Like, everybody keeps talking about it. They feel stuck and like they're living the same,
mm-hmm.
like they just keep going through the same day over and over and over again, to which I would say, yeah, that's kind of what life and having a job is. you roll the rock up the hill, and the next day you get there and you got to roll it back up the hill.
Yep.
Like, we're all Sisyphus, man. But I was like, that's an interesting, like, negative take on a show that is clearly saying that that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
is pointing out the kind of the, even though it's chaos, it's monotonous chaos, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Like, I don't, you see, like, I saw some of those reviews and I was like, no. I'm not going to read that because that's not. Like, there's so much intent in the show. Like, Christopher Storer is kind of like this blue collar, like, he's like the blue collar answer to like somebody like Paul Thomas Anderson or Like, I don't know, like he's like, he's like, if, like, for me, he's like if Ron Howard was more artful. If that makes, like, and that's not an insult to Ron Howard. It's just that Ron Howard has a ceiling, right? Like I love Ron Howard movies, but Ron Howard could never make The Bear. Now, like, his new movie Eden looks like some shit there. Like, he got to go dark, but like it's like it's like The Bear is kind of like the dysfunctional version of parenthood in a lot of ways, like this artful like version of parenthood, because it deals with middle class in a way that I don't think that anybody has artfully dealt with it. Like, you don't ever see, like, you don't ever see middle class people going to Copenhagen and having an experience like they do when they go off there to like learn how to cook. It's like there's very artful ways of doing this show that I feel like the middle class gets treated with this respect that, like, it's almost like, you know what it is? Ron Howard by way of Quentin Tarantino. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, it's like the facts, I love the facts. Like, they're my, like, if Christopher Storer said, you know what, I'm going to do I'm going to do a spinoff of this and it's just going to be called Fact You, I'd be there. Why? Because the way that the facts are all written, it's no wonder that they have, like, and I got ruined who their sister is. Like,
I've seen her yet.
Oh, no. Okay, don't read anything, because when you read it, it's just as a fun of casting that John Cena was as their, as their cousin. Or I'm sorry, as their brother. but if you gave me a fact, like, I love the facts because they're just like, they're like, or the Coens by way of Ron Howard. Like, just give me, like, I just love the show. I love this show, even though it attacks me emotionally. It's a show that you kind of like end up, you love these people because of how broken they are. Like, for their brokenness, right? Like, where, you know me, I'm a big person where, like, people doing terrible shit, I fucking hate. Like, you gotta give me a reason to, like, understand them, and, like, The Bear always gives me a reason. Like,
yeah.
Like seeing what Sydney did last season, I was yelling at her on the screen, but I knew exactly why she was doing it. And you can't complain, right? So yeah, I will get into it probably. We'll probably get into it in the next few weekends. I figured that we could have a discussion later on this summer. Not this summer, but you know what I mean? In a few weeks when we both have kind of digested it and actually had a chance to actually really kind of dive into it. Because, like, even though they're dumping it, it doesn't deserve a dump. Like, it doesn't... No. Like, I don't see how people can... Like, it's the same people that watch true crime shows as they go to sleep. It's like, how the fuck... Yeah. And then they're like, I can't get sleep. Well, motherfucker, stop watching like shows about husbands, fucking husbands burying their ex-wives in lie. Maybe you won't have nightmares. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what you say. I'm excited to get a little bit further. See what else they do. The show, and you'll see what I mean when you watch it. Mm-hmm. In the first episode, they do put a ticking clock on the show, so okay. that there's like this countdown that's constantly there. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's kind of interesting if this truly is going to be it for the show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also like, you don't need that, you know? We kind of all understand that restaurants are not... that they're difficult, you know. It's the number one failing business in the world, right?
Yep. Yeah. Like,
start a restaurant, probably gonna fail. Yep. You know, that it happens. Anyway, yeah, you know, I'm excited to see what else they do with it.
Absolutely.
So, a show that we both, I think, watched. I only got to see the first episode. I don't know if you watched all three, but yes. Ironheart premiered this past week.
Okay, yes. I watched all three. And if you have negative thoughts about it, I'm going to tell you to wait and see because
I don't.
Okay.
Like,
good.
I think spoilers for Ironheart. The first episode I thought was great. I thought it was absolutely like fun, charming. I think the flashback stuff is a little not. I don't think it's handled particularly well. The way it's like edited into the show, to try to illustrate her trauma. I don't think that's done. It feels like you don't know how whoever's making the show. I didn't look it up. I know Coogler's producing it, but it feels like you don't know how to do that.
It gets better. Like, so by the second episode, once what I liked about it was that once you figure out what, like, why, like, okay, so like in the final moment when you see her friend, who you've only been gotten glimpses of, like, it all gets explained in the second episode, but also
additionally, I thought that was the thing I was going to be like, it's so weird that, like, she somehow created an AI version of her dead friend.
Yeah, and it's a mystery that has repercussions through these first three episodes. And it's very interesting what they're doing. Like, I like that concept, and I like how they're handling it, because it's both, it's a low stakes thing, but it's also not a low stakes thing, because there are some things that happen because of her, there's a lot of stuff in here that is tied to her and what she is and who she is that make up the core of some of the story, because it is kind of like when you start getting into it, it becomes this thing where it's part of the central storyline in a way that like Vision is a part of a storyline, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah.
My favorite part of the three is like of the three episodes is her relationship with the Alden Ehrenreich character, whose name is Joe McGillicuddy. It's not his real name, but I don't know if you know who he plays, but I won't ruin it. But her relationship with him is kind of very interesting and becomes higher stakes as things go along. And it's going to be very interesting to see where that goes. Because like giving Alden Ehrenreich this kind of moment of like, I mean, he's been in other stuff. I mean, like, you know, it's not, it's, it, it's like, you know, he was in a movie that, what's his name? God, I can't even think of his name. Poker Face.
Oh, Rian Johnson.
Rian Johnson had produced. He was in Oppenheimer. It's called Fair Play. I don't know if you saw it. It was very interesting.
I haven't seen it, but okay. It was kind of sort of on my radar. Only I think I heard about it probably on the film cast. And I like Alden Ehrenreich. I do think I know who he's playing. A lot of this is going to tie back to some Iron Man stuff, if I'm right. But I'm excited to see. The one other negative thing I have to say about the show, and then I'll get to some other stuff that I like. The Hood looks stupid. He looks stupid.
He does, and it gets better once they start pulling jobs. Like his powers and stuff, and
but you but don't is, see his powers off the jump, so
no,
you just don't see this kid in this red cloak standing around with all these other people dressed, yes, eccentrically, but like not anything you wouldn't normally see. This motherfucker, he looks like he stepped out of like a LARPing session to come hang out with his friends, and it looks I get that the gang doesn't like bring up the Hood because they know, but the fact that she didn't, I was like, she should be saying something. Like, yo, man, why are you wearing that stupid hood?
Well, okay, so that, okay, so, like, that's one of the weaker points of the story. Like, you're going to find out, and, like, so I don't want to disappoint you or frustrate you even more, but the whole thing is that she's the one that's asking the questions of, like, why is he wearing this dumb hood? Like, why? And then they're like, you know what? We just don't ask those things. Because he's given us all this stuff. And it's kind of like, why wouldn't you? Like, I mean, I know that with the they, them person in the film, like, in the show, like, you know, it's like, she would be like, they would be like, oh, well, I mean, you know, do your thing. You know, you are you. And a lot of them are like that. Like, they're very much like it's interesting to see how, like, they casted a bunch of what would be considered by many to be social outcasts, because you have the sisters that are fighting. Oh, I mean, I don't know if you, like, I can't remember if that's in the second episode. No, like, you see the two sisters.
Yeah. They kicked the shit out of those security guards. The first episode, the blood sisters. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And then, you know, Eric Andre is basically playing Eric Andre.
So if he's Rampage was a character in the New Warriors, and it's so far away from who that character actually is that it's kind of hysterical. Eric Andre is fun. Like, he's fun.
Yes. But it's like they're purposely, and this is the thing that's kind of fun in the show, is that they're purpose, like, they're doing it on purpose. Like, there is a purpose for that, for the kind of weird casting, but also, like, they don't question anything. It's like, it's very weird, that they don't do this. And she's the only one that's really questioning things. And it becomes the cliches of it all, like, do come out. Like, you know, she does want to know more, and then there's something that she does on a mission that has consequences. It sets the table. By the third episode, I understand why they did the three episodes, and then they're doing another. Like, they're dropping them at in two chunks. Like, July 1st will have the rest of the three episodes, and I understand why they did that, because the way that the third episode ends is the perfect kind of cliffhanger to get you to watch, if you watch all three, to get you to watch next week. Because it's definitely, it sets, like, by the last episode, you have the stakes set for both sides. Like, you already have, by the second episode, you already have kind of, like, this, like, what Riri is looking at and what she sees. But by the end of the third, you now understand what's going on with Robin. And you understand the stakes that are set for him.
Okay. I think the show looks fantastic.
Yeah.
I think everybody, beyond the costuming stuff, I think everybody in the show is great. Like, I think everybody's doing great work. She's phenomenal. She's better in the one episode of this show that I watched than she was in Black Panther, which,
yeah,
makes, like, we know Coogler's good. I need to revisit Wakanda Forever, because, like, I don't know if I can actually enjoy that movie just because of the weight of it all. Like, I don't think we talked negatively about it when we watched it, but I don't have this, like, attachment to it. That, you know, and I shouldn't. So,
well, it's a 2.5 hour movie. Like, it's a 2.5 hour grieving session. Like, it's the thing that let everybody say goodbye to Chad, and like, you know, Chad is missed, and, like, I think that ultimately it's going to be one of those movies that are going to be like, when you talk about it, it's like, oh yeah, you know what, I've watched that maybe twice. And it's good, but, you know, it's just the weight of it is a lot for any movie. Like, it's like any movie that deals with grief and that kind of, like, And that's the weirdest part, is that I have to respect a movie like this because it literally sits there and it puts the grief front and center, right?
Yeah.
It's not sideways. Like, it's like the first 20 minutes, like, you know, he dies. We don't see it, but we absolutely are in the room when he dies. Like, and to like, from that point forward, deal with what it means to lose a figurehead. And like, essentially, like, you know, lose your compass is, that's a lot to take. Like, I don't know, well, man. Like, it is a lot.
And Ironheart's kind of doing the same thing with Tony, but she didn't know Stark. But he was kind of like this beacon for her. Mm-hmm. And she kind of wants to pick up that mantle, and the show opens with her talking about helping people and like what the work she's doing could do. But she also has that little bit of like cockiness in her that Stark had, where it's about helping people? Yes, but it's also about them knowing that she's the one that's helping, you know? I think she's freaking great, man. I hope that if Young Avengers doesn't wind up really being a thing, I do hope Armor Wars does become a thing, because even with one episode, I felt like they were kind of setting a stage for that, because it's something that was initially talked about, that was going to be a show, then it was going to be a movie, and now it's kind of just not been discussed in a year or two. But I can see all these factions coming into play, because she has now kind of outed herself as being able to kind of create this stuff by flying a suit through Chicago and crash landing. I'm really excited to see what the rest of the show brings, mostly for her performance. Like, I'm loving her take on all of it. I did think it was weird that her friend had a tape deck. Who under the age of 20 or 25 has a fucking tape deck?
Well, so, like, the whole, like, I can't remember if it's in the second episode or this episode. It is in this episode. The whole band, going to see the band and, like, the producer thing, like, really feels like the Coogler of it all, because, like, Creed and Creed 2 have that kind of storyline of, like artists in cities, and giving them a chance to kind of like showcase, because this was filmed in Chicago on location.
Which is probably why it costs so much money.
Yeah. But also, like, it's kind of great that they did that, because like Coogler loves to showcase people. He does it in all of his films, musically. He does this. So like, as a show that he had a very strong, from what I understand, had a very strong arm in producing, I don't see that he didn't like let like these people that are performing in the club or like in that house party scene. I would not put it past them that these are real artists that are like, you know, just breaking, that he wanted to showcase, or he wanted the, like, you know, he was telling his production team and the showrunner, show these people off. Like, give the city a flavor that's there, like, that's Chicago. Don't let it just be, like, if we could have filmed this in Atlanta, we could have filmed this in Atlanta. I mean, you know, when we're on the streets, let's go ahead and have them do this. So, but yeah, like, the tape deck thing was really weird. Like, it was, like, a really kind of, like, are you trying to do the Guardian? Like, are you trying to, like, call back to Guardians but not call back? But also at the same time, that there's a reason why they had that there. This doesn't feel like there's a reason for it.
Yeah. I'm excited to get to it. So.
No, absolutely. Like, hopefully by the time we talk next, like, all of the episodes will be out, and you'll be able to
Yeah,
name all
hopefully I
that
will
stuff.
have seen all of them, but I will have at least seen the first three. The plan is to watch some more of this Sunday. I doubt we'll get to it today. Tonight we're or this late this afternoon we're driving to Atlanta and we're going to see the Book of Mormon. So,
Our
yeah.
buddy, actually, you know what, you know who, our buddy Scott is actually going to see that tonight, I think. So
Oh, really?
you might actually run into him. He got tickets because he knows, like, I guess a friend of a friend, like a friend of his dog sitter, or like his dog sitter's boyfriend is like an well, like is a part of the orchestra, and he had friends and family tickets that he gave to her, and she couldn't make it, so she gave them to Scott. I know that sounds like a really weird way, a roundabout way of saying he's going, but he's going. So yeah, you might actually see him there.
That would be awesome. So anyway, back to what else we've watched. So I think there's only two things on the list, both movies. Actually, we haven't texted, so I'm now wondering if you did get a chance to watch it. Predator, Killer of Killers, because we didn't talk about that.
Do you want to talk about, do you want to talk about, because I'm fairly certain you and I are going to have different opinions about the second movie. Do we want to talk that first,
28
and then we'll
years
pause?
later? Yeah, we can talk 28 years later first because I my thoughts on that are pretty short and simple. So, do you want to go first or you want me to go
Sure.
first?
No, sure. No, I can go first. So I feel like it's a big swing, and some of those swings don't hit and don't connect, but the ones that do, holy shit, like it is a film that very much feels like it's a part of the 28 like year, month, or days trilogy, but it's also like a brand new one that stopped exactly when I feel like I want it to move forward. The main storyline of the kid is so like Last of Us that Alex Garland should be smacked.
We don't have differing opinions of this.
But as soon as Ralph Fiennes shows up, this fucking movie soars. Like, this
Oh,
is a second
we are
half.
in lock fucking step. Lock step.
Because,
I'm so
but,
with you.
oh, okay,
I'm so
because
with you.
it, but the movie soars so high that I forgive that first half. Like, this is going to be a movie that I'm going to buy in 4K, because I'm told
Watch the last 30 minutes of
the last, it's actually, I clocked it, it's literally the last hour. The last hour of the
Okay.
movie is where, like, as soon as he takes his mother to go see Ralph Fiennes' character, it's literally 45 or 50 minutes into the movie. And from that point forward, it soars. As soon as he shows up, as soon as Fiennes shows up, and he's not the Colonel Kurtz weirdo that you think he is, but he isn't. The movie soars. Like, that's the movie I wanted. It just took getting comfortable to get there, which is so weird, but from that point forward, it soars. I fucking loved the movie. Like that the movie, I forgive all of that. I don't like Aaron Taylor Johnson. Like, I'm not a fan.
I don't I so I think he's fine in the role and you're not supposed to like him really, but I do get what you're saying. Like he's not bringing anything compelling to the table.
No, absolutely not. And I mean, especially when you have
I think he
Fiennes.
was more compelling in Craven.
Yeah, with that fucking stupid accent. Absolutely. Because he's having to play against fucking the ham that is Russell Crowe, right? Like, Russell Crowe, and then whoever that other kid was, I can't remember who he was. And then, like, Adriana DeBose, who at this point, like, I'm sorry to tell you guys, but her Academy Award should be taken away from her with all the shitty roles that she's played. But anywho, but like, you can't, like, Jodie Comer, whatever the fuck she's doing in this movie, Ralph Fiennes, fucking Ralph Fiennes. Like, he is like, Like, he's just like, he's been on this streak where he's just like, yeah, I'm just going to come back and show you the reasons why I'm refined.
Yeah.
Beyond Voldemort. Like, it's just a wild-ass movie when the kid takes the thing up to the top and Fiennes is talking about grief. Like, first of all, it's fucking disturbing, right? Like, when he does that, when he takes his mom away, and you're like, oh my god, is he gonna do... Holy shit, what the fuck is this movie about? I mean, I know the whole Alpha Ding Dong thing was fucking weird, but I mean, Boyle and Garland are like, yeah, that's not the weirdness. Here's the weirdness.
Yeah.
But then it's like Jack O'Connell shows up as fucking Jimmy Savile, which is like the leader of the Jimmies. Like, that shit was fucking weird. I mean, if you know who, like, a guy, guys, if you don't know who Jimmy Savile is, look him up. He was an unremittent, like, disgusting sex pest. Like, that's not even does it justice, but his character, like, the weirder part is that they didn't find out till very much later after he died. But the thing was that he was the guy who was the host that was basically, he was the guy that what's his name was based off of in Love Actually. Oh God, I can't think of his name. Bill Nighy. He's kind of like, he was the guy that he was based off of. And like, there's a whole history there. And I guess the second movie is going to be dealing with the Jack O'Connell character and his band of merry Mad Max zombie killers. But, yeah, I mean, so you're in line with me where it was like the first half was kind of like, what?
So I think this is a mostly boring movie. I was pretty bored with all of it, and unfortunately, by the time we get to the part that I'm with you, that fine stuff is interesting. Mm-hmm. It moves forward. Even the stuff with his mom before that, I was kind of bored with, but it's because, like, there was nothing compelling at all in that first hour for me. I mean, maybe 5 minutes here or there. Like, that opening scene with the young kids is kind of interesting, but the movie is just such a slog after that I wasn't super hyped until, like, Fiennes shows up. That stuff I was really interested in. And then that last little bit, I was like, oh, this looks exciting. This looks interesting. And that's the end of the movie. You know, the kid striking out on his own, you know, and then meeting the Jimmies. I don't know. It's not what the trailers show. I don't think it's even really a horror movie. It's a movie about grief and trauma and which a lot of horror is, but it's so on the nose about everything. Like, it's just straight up dealing with that and not disguising it as horror. And so it's weird. I think a lot of people are going to see this movie and, well, maybe not, but the people who go see this movie expecting something are going to be probably as disappointed as I was.
Okay. I mean, fair enough. You're probably right. I think that the second movie is going to be the movie that I think that everybody wants, everybody was expecting. Which, I mean, at this point, it's made more than its budget back. It's made about $80 million worldwide. It's probably gonna make, you know, about $200 million worldwide, which is more than enough to cover it. And I know that they are already starting pre-production on the second one, which actually has because they're dealing with mainland England. They've already said Cillian Murphy is in the second and third ones.
So I thought they had already announced a release date, like early next year. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think it's next summer. I think it's next summer is what they were talking about. Because this one actually had a fast production too. Like, this one was filming last year. Like, literally last year in the fall, and it was released this year. So they're doing the same thing, but it's not directed by Boyle. It's directed by Nia DaCosta, who did the Candyman remake, which is a good movie, which is a very good movie. But from what I understand, that it gets progressively bigger, and the reason why Boyle didn't want to do the second one was because he was doing the third one, and the prep work for the third one is, like, massive. And he's like, you know, he wanted to concentrate on that. And he felt like every time that a guy does a trilogy, the second one is always the best one because their focus is so on the second one that they don't get to the third one, and the third one is lacking. So I guess, like, they locked down everything, handed it over to DaCosta, and is doing the third one. At least that's what I
mean. That'll be fine. I hope that they're both at least more interesting and more compelling than most of this movie, which was, like I said, just boring for me. I think the kid is great. I think he's holding his own against actors that are, you know, well known. I wish there was something more there. Very, very disappointed in that. And I didn't really have high hopes for it. it sucked to be let down by something I wasn't really, you know, like, super pumped for anyway. I'm sure I'll be more down about Jurassic World next week because you know, I'm pumped for that, so it can probably only let me down.
I mean though, Gareth Edwards does Monster really good.
He does
do Monster really well, and it was filmed in 35, which hasn't happened since the original trilogy, which is interesting. And the cast, I like the cast, so if you at least just give me good dino action, I'll be okay.
That's 28 years. That's the thing. Like, I don't think that there was good. I know they're not zombies. I know they're infected. I don't think the stuff with the infected is really that good. Like, there's all these, you know, the weird cuts. Mm-hmm. From, like, day to night to, like, them in the camera. It's supposed to be disturbing, but mostly it's just like, okay, what are you doing, man? Like, we all know you know how to cut a movie. You're being thrown in all these flourishes that you don't really need for this. And also, the I was telling Steph about this because I read or listened to probably a podcast talking about how they filmed this movie, and some, maybe not all of it, was basically him strapping like 30 iPhones to a dude and filming, you know, like a bunch of different angles at once with iPhones. And that way they'd have more shots to choose from. And that doesn't work. Stop being experimental, Danny Boyle. I know you know how to make a movie.
We will, like I said, we'll see with the next sequel where it goes, because it's definitely happening. Because, like I said, it's a hit. They made it for cheap, and it's making money. But to a sequel that I think that we probably are both going to agree on. Predator Killer of Killers.
It's a sequel. It's a prequel. It's a sidequel. It's a reboot. Yes. It's the first animated movie in the Predator franchise.
Okay, so I have one thing. The biggest gripe I have before, like, I just want to get it out of the way before we really kind of talk, we talk lovingly about this film, is the final conceit does not make sense to me. I know it's timey-wimey bullshit like Doctor Who likes to say, but it didn't make like it instantly stopped me in my tracks for a few minutes because I was like, how the fuck do they get all three of these people in on the same time period when there's not like what? This doesn't make sense unless the Predators have time travel things and you're not telling me, okay, maybe I'm just not supposed to think about this.
So, that's not, so Dan Trachtenberg didn't create that problem for the Predators. He is playing in that field, but the third movie has characters from different time periods. Not drastically different, but different.
But only by like a couple of years. A couple of years. Like every if you see the like the third one, Predators by Anatoly Nimrod, like the director of that movie, and produced by fucking Rodriguez, right? They are all within a decade of one another, which I can make sense of time freezing somebody and go hopping from like, you know, like light speed to like places, but this is hundreds of years. Like, it was wild to me. That's the only thing that I had a problem with. As soon as I just kind of let it go and just said, okay, you know what? Eventually they're going to, they will, like, even if they don't explain it, this movie has earned my allegiance with the three mini stories. And then like the kind of coolness of combining these people together is so awesome that I can't not just kind of go along with it, right? Like the whole sci-fi trope of whatever happened, it happened. And like, let's just not read into it too much. That's the only problem I have. Like, literally this, like, it's a big one, but it's not big enough to like, it didn't stop me in my tracks and went, okay, the rest of this I cannot fucking agree with. It's such a good fucking movie. And the conceit of it is so fucking awesome that I was like, okay, I'm with you. Like, you convinced me.
Yeah. I mean, Dan Trachtenberg definitely knows how to make a Predator movie. We already knew that. But this is more in line with traditional Predator movie kind of tropes. Including introducing new cool weapons, like a la like Predator 2, where it's just like, oh, he's upgraded. He's got all these cool new weapons. There's so much to love here. And what's great is even if you're not truly, truly enjoying a segment, it's over in 20 minutes and then you're on to something else. And it sucks. I don't love the World War II segment. Was it World War II or World War
One? Yeah, World War II.
Mostly because like that guy's not, the cream of the crop. He kind of just Jar Jar Binks his way into being captured by the Predators.
But the funniest part about that, okay, so like what I like about this, like what it adds into the story wrinkle of it all, and it explains something that I was like, okay, why didn't we see it? It adds to the reason why we didn't see somebody in a sequel, and I'll get to that in a moment. I like the fact that it doesn't matter how you won. If you won, you're taken away. If you won against the Predator that you're going up against, you become an elite killer. It doesn't matter how you did it. The Predators are killer of killers, right? Like the best part about this movie is that it's not, this is the first movie that isn't about the Predators, but absolutely are, because I didn't get it until the second, the Samurai one, that I was like, oh, killer of killers means that these are the Predators' killers. These are the elite of the elite. It doesn't matter how you killed them. It just matters that you killed them and you are a species worthy of them examining. It's like the whole thing of like, oh, you're an elite. I'm going to take you because you're an apex predator. I need to see you and study you. Doesn't matter whether or the fact that he was kind of like, he was kind of a jaunty ass guy that got lucky, right? I mean, and he continues to prove to be lucky, right? But that's the reason why. But also, it adds in, like I was going to say, it adds in a huge wrinkle that I had a problem with, like, you know, the sequel is always like, well, why didn't Dutch Schaefer show up? Well, we know why. Because they eventually got his ass. Because, like, at the cut of McTiernan's Predator within the helicopter, the other Predators came in and took Dutch's ass, right? Because he killed the Predator. Same with the only inconsistency is whatchamacallit, is Predator 2, where Danny Glover doesn't get taken, right? But that, because the Predator should have taken him, right? But then again, we don't know. We don't know that. We don't know whether or not, like, after the credits roll, he gets taken away too. But we definitely know that it is a thing, because at the end, we get the nice credit roll thing of, we see, what's her name from Prey?
Yeah, Amber Midthunder.
Her so, character is there, so.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea that does, like you said, kind of fly in the face of the first two Predator movies, but not to the point where, like you said, that you couldn't kind of retcon some of that. It'll be interesting to see if they do. I mean, having another animated Predator movie and two of the, like, even if it's just the two combatants, if one of them is voiced by Danny Glover and the other one's voiced by Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'm kind of here for that.
Like, yeah,
that'd be pretty great, you know?
Exactly.
I loved this, like, had such a good time with it. I think all the Predator design work is phenomenal. The action set pieces are just, they're fucking great, man. Like, they different really types of action displayed in every little segment. It has me really excited for Badlands, which I was already pretty excited for. So what was your favorite segment?
Oh, the sword.
Yeah.
It just everything about, like, it was kind of funny, because I have in my notes, it was funny that, like, I know that Trachtenberg's a huge gaming fan, and literally he gave us three, like, gaming inspired, like, short films. The Shield being God of War, the Sword being Ghost of Tsushima, and then the Bullet being Call of Duty, right? But of the things, it was the Sword that was really great. Like, because the action, the story, everything just kind of, it gelled in a way that I feel like the design, the, like, everything just kind of worked in a way that I feel like it was something that we have seen before, a trope we have seen in samurai and ninja movies. Like, you betrayed me, you were my brother, I'm going to get revenge. But it was done in such a great way with the Predator added into it that I feel like for me, like, that was the best of the best. Because the Shield is kind of like the Viking one for me is kind of like, okay, well, we've kind of seen this young, like, you know, the young kid, but we've not, like it didn't add anything to it. Like, right? Like, I did like the fact that her son dies, like her fucking son dies, like, it summarily murdered, right? But there was nothing really added to it other than that twist. And the same goes for the Bullet. The Bullet is kind of feels like Top Gun Maverick World War II in a weird way. Like, like, there's this whole story. Like, I don't get me wrong, I loved the fact that we finally, for the first time, got different kind of combat. Like, this is all about, like, planes and shit. Like, that's awesome, right? Like, the Predator ship and stuff. Michael Biehn being cast, and so now he's officially, like, you know, One of the few
he's
actors.
He's been killed by a predator, a terminator, and an alien. So yes. It's him, Bill Paxton, and Lance Hendrickson.
Yeah, she hasn't. Jeanette Goldstein has not. She's gotten two of three. I was going to say.
I was like, who else is there?
No, but Jeanette Goldstein has two. Has two of three. She has the Predator, she has the Terminator and the Alien. But okay. She doesn't have, because T-1000 killed her.
Yeah.
In Terminator 2. And he's great as the gruff, like his voice is so perfect for the gruff captain, man.
I mean, you wouldn't even know it was him.
No.
Like.
No. If you didn't know it was him, like, yeah.
Yeah. So, I really, really enjoyed this. I had such a good time. I don't know. Now I'm just like, why haven't we gotten more animated stuff? You know? Like,
yeah.
This is, I mean, not that we didn't know what was possible in animation, but it's like, I don't know. It, like, it reminds me of, like, discovering heavy metal, which I recently got in 4K. I got the 4K Steelbook.
Yes.
With heavy metal and the heavy metal 2000. You know,
2000. That's so terrible. Like, I love the original, David Fincher owes, like, royalties for Love, Sex, and Robots, or yes. Love, Robots, and Death. So owes so much money to them for that. But, I wanted to talk to you about that. Like, other than... My one of my favorite things, and I don't know, like, I loved the language barrier, like, in the final battle. Like, that was, like, perfect to me, is that we only get one character, and that's the reason why I feel like you get John Torres the fuck up, is because you needed a guy that's kind of, like, in out of his element, right?
Oh, yeah, and who will constantly kind of just talk his way through things, because if he's completely competent, and, like, he'll just go, and you the story doesn't need that. It needs somebody who will kind of just narrate what you need to know and illustrate, like, oh, we can't communicate with each other. It's I get the necessity of it all. It is just kind of like, oh, yeah, the Predators don't always choose the best people. Like, you know, it is, like I said, it is that he Jar Jar Binks his way into, you know, facing down this, I forget what they call him, the Alpha Predator.
Yeah, the Apex, you know? Or something. Yeah.
So, whose design is pretty badass.
I love the fact that all the Predators look different. Like, they're different subspecies of Predator. Like, that was a thing that I definitely enjoyed. I also, like, think that, like, we're getting to an era now where the creators and directors are like us. They love animation. Like Trachtenberg has been on record as being an anime fan. Like, the same that, like, Coogler is. Like, they're all kind of a part of the same subset, but, like, the fact that they're allowed to do this thing where, I mean, he basically, like, I feel like this is smart filmmaking because it was done on the cheap. It was made with the Unreal Engine, which means that it was done for relatively cost-effective. It was non-generative. Basically, the Unreal Engine is basically a non-generative AI kind of thing, where they got to, like, use this to produce it in a very cheap manner. They still used animators, but it was done in processing it and done very, very cheaply. But it doesn't look cheap. Just because the word cheap is there, they didn't even release the budget, because I think that it was sub eight figures. Like, it was more like seven figures, and done very fast. From what I understand, less than a year's time, yeah. Which means that they could do more of this, which I hope they do. Everything I've heard, it was actually a huge hit.
I really would have liked to have seen it on the big screen. It is a damn shame it could not get a... I mean, it's a pretty crowded summer, so yes. I get it, but yeah. I can watch it, you know, I can stream it, project it on on a big screen, but I want to, you know, see it on a big screen.
Jermaine Lucier, who writes for IGN, had gotten to see it, and he actually wrote a whole thing about it and how great it looked projected in 4K, and how how transcended the animation was. It kind of created this whole very unreal kind of image of it. It's hallucinatory in the way that it worked. So I would not be surprised if the next one gets a limited release, because Trachtenberg is ultimately Prey did so well, and there was such a noise about it that they ponied up the money for Badlands to be released theatrically. So if that does well, I could definitely see Predator.
Is Dan Trachtenberg just gonna make Predator movies for the rest of his life? If that's what he wants to do and it makes him happy, I'm all for it. Yeah. Because he definitely seems to be the only person in the last 20 years to understand what this franchise is and can be.
Yeah.
We're about to watch, in a few months, we'll see his third Predator movie in 5 years. And I don't think he's made anything else in that time. I'm sure he's probably stepping away after Badlands if for a little bit, you know, maybe creatively he'll still be involved, you know, producer wise or whatever. It worries me, because if Badlands tanks, then that's, you know, that's not good news for him. And that sucks, because this is a guy that deserves so much more than he's gotten. And it's impossible. I think especially for people like us, it's impossible not to pull for him, because he's one of us. It's literally he came from this world, you know. He was essentially a podcaster, you know. Shit, what was the name of their show? Totally Rad Show. This is what he wanted to do. He's done it, and I don't know. I would love to see him take on some bigger stuff. I'd also like to see something. I know he's done something original. Well, not really, because it was a spinoff, right? Whatchamacallit movie? Cloverfield movie?
Like all Cloverfield movies, except for Cloverfield, it started as an original. It was an original, and then they, halfway through the production, they turned it into a Cloverfield movie, adding that big budget ending, because the whole thing was that his movie didn't end with them, the movie ended with them leaving her leaving the underground bunker, and that was it. There was no additional scenes. And that's why it was such a low budget movie, was because it was all set in the bunker. It didn't have the alien at the end and shit. They just tacked on. But yeah, no, you're right. I would love to see him take on something that was original.
He shepherds. So if it's an adaptation of something, then it's something that he chooses, not him stepping into somebody else's world, you know. And but that's if that's what he wants, you know, if he's happy to keep playing in other people's sandboxes, because clearly he's very good at it.
Very good.
You know, him taking on a Marvel project, which seems probably unlikely, because you know, they have such control, you know, you gotta be, but working under gun on a DC level thing, I don't know. I really, really hope that he gets all the good things, because holy shit, you know, Killer of Killers is one of the best like animated projects I've seen in quite a while.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He also has, like, you know, he directed one of the final episodes of Stranger Things.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah. He was picked for, yeah. he was picked as one of the final directors.
Nice. So, he, that's a world he definitely understands. Like, I don't, if you ever watched the Totally Rad Show back in the day, I mean, Karate Kid was his favorite damn movie. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's, he's definitely of that era. So, yeah, if you didn't watch Killer of Killers, it's freaking phenomenal, man.
It really is.
I can't wait to see more.
Yeah, so. And I hope that it gets a physical media release. Like, I still haven't bought
Prey. Oh, God, me too.
I haven't bought Prey, which I really should, but it's like $50. Like, you can't, like it. There's no cheap way to buy Prey. Like, even on Blu-ray, like, I want the 4K.
Yeah, I got the Blu-ray. I didn't get the 4K.
But, you know what? I just checked it right now. It's $24. I'm buying it. Fuck it. Buying it on while we are on. Because you want it. I want it on 4K. But like, I hope that Killers of Killers gets a 4K release.
Yeah, that's a pretty good discount, because it is like $39 usually or something like that. So.
And that's a great movie. Like, I really do love Prey. It's like, that's another one that it's like, if Killer, like, what my hope is that it gets a limited release right before a Badlands. Like, yeah. I really do hope it gets, so that we can go ahead and see it. Like, that would be great. But yeah. If they don't, they don't. But next week, what are we talking about? Are we going to talk Megan 2 and F1? F1 and Megan 2?
So I'm fingers crossed by the time we record next week, unless the shit continues to hit the fan, I will have seen Megan. I will have seen F1. I will have seen Jurassic World. And that's probably it. So.
Well, that's a heavy load. Like, I mean, that is a heavy load. I've already seen F1. I got to see it in real IMAX. We've talked about it. My review is on the site. That's what I would promote. Tell you to go read my review. And this is not an insult. The short, quick, sweet version of this. This is F1. If I could sum it up in one big way, it would be Top Gun Maverick, Days of Thunder, Brad Pitt. Like, that's literally what it would be called. It's definitely, like, you see the origins of Days of Thunder in it. I mean, you can't not, like, when you watch the, like, there's only so many stories you can tell. There's only, like, really one story you can tell with racing movies. Rubbin is racing, except for here it's not, because it's open wheel. But I don't see how you cannot. And then it's just like, it's an overwhelmingly visual and auditory experience to see on the big screen. Like, it was what I wanted from the movie. Like, I got exactly what I expected. So.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I'm going to see it in real IMAX tonight. Not tonight, tomorrow night. With Spitzer and a couple other people, I think. So, excited for that. Yeah, and then I will have seen Book of Mormon as well, and we can probably chat a little bit about that. So,
okay.
So, yeah, this is the shortest episode we've ever recorded.
It really is. I thought, to be honest, I thought it was 12:39 already, but it's 11:39. But at the same time, I mean, we really did have a, like we really did have a lot to talk about.
No, I've been moving. So
yeah. So and I've been busy. I've been really busy with work. So it's just been one of those things. Like, you can read my work on, like, you know, on themovieisle.com. Like all these stuff, like F1. There's a bunch of 4K reviews.
I finally got my Tombstone.
Oh, you did? Oh shit!
Yeah.
Okay.
Finally, it only fucking took 6 weeks. I think I ordered it over a month ago.
Jesus. So I just got to see, I should tell you, because we haven't caught up yet. I might as well, like, I mean, we got a few minutes. Like, added things. I finally got to see the 4K of the director's cut of Kingdom of Heaven. Jesus Christ, yeah. That's probably the prettiest transfer I've ever seen. Like,
I've got to watch it. I've never seen Kingdom of Heaven. Not any version of it.
Okay, so just, like, watch the director's cut, which is, I think, I have the DVD set. Okay, yeah. Then, dude, you are in for a treat. It's like, buckle up for a night. Like, you know, have the pasta ready, have the wine or the vino if you're drinking the vino. Like, have everything ready, have the desserts, and just make a night out of it. Because, Jesus, that movie is, like, it's a four-hour... Like, it's a four-hour tour de force. It's wonderful. I love that movie. But I got to see the 4K of it finally. Another thing that's on the review, like, that just posted this past Friday. The 4K edition of Cobra. The most 80s movie that ever did 80s. I fucking love that movie. I forget
the only thing I remember about Cobra is it's the opening scene, right? It's like a convenience store or something.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's the only fucking thing. Yeah, just the only thing I remember about that movie.
Have you ever you do you remember, like, my favorite part about it is the end, because do you remember Patton Oswalt, how he used to talk, like, he did this bit about metal videos, how they were always set in a factory that only their only job was to create sparks.
Yes.
That was literally what happens at the end of Cobretti. Like, they're in a, like, him and Brian Thompson, who, man, there's never been a more Brian Thompson role than this one in Cobretti. In Cobra. And they're just fighting with knives in a factory that makes sparks. It's literally T2, but instead of Arnold versus Robert Patrick, it's Sylvester Stallone versus Brian Thompson. And if you guys don't know who Brian Thompson is, once you see him in Cobra, you will know absolutely who the fuck I'm talking about. But yeah, Cobra, the 4K, oh man. Oh, if you're a fan of Marion Cobretti and his exploits, you will be so happy with this 4K disc. It literally rivals the 4K discs that were released for Rambo. Like, they look that good. And those Rambo discs they're pretty great. So yeah, that's there. Oh, did you get your Dark City yet?
Yeah, finally got Dark City too.
Okay, good. So. And if you guys didn't know, the Barnes and Noble has the, like, you know, Logan was talking about the Criterion Closet. They actually have their 50% off sale. So if you have specific things that you're looking for, you can get them super cheap right now. The only thing is that if you're expecting to go in and get that massive box set on the cheap for Wes Anderson, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer, because it doesn't include pre-sales. So, but everything else is 50% off. So if you want something, you're looking for something. Yeah.
I wish I had the money right now.
Trust me. Yeah, I picked up a few. I picked a few yesterday. I can't actually wait. Like, I know this sounds weird, but I'm a huge fan of it. The Wiz. They released a 4K, like, Criterion released the 4K of The Wiz. So I picked it up, and I think that we're going to watch that sometime in the next few weeks. So I can't wait actually watch it. So, but yeah.
So go check out everything else we're doing at xwingfiles.com, which isn't much right now. Hopefully we'll get back to it soon. And we'll be back next week talking about a shit ton of movies.
Yes.
We'll see you guys then.
See you guys then. Number 3, Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Cal. Number 8, Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s. Back before they all sold out. See it all together if you're with me now.